Brian, thank you very much. Last weekend, thousands of people marched peacefully through Belfast. They wore red to show that they were Dara Glafarig, red with anger. And they were looking for official recognition of the Irish language in Northern Ireland. And today, legislation will be introduced by Westminster to give official recognition to both Irish and Ulster Scots. Ciarán McGeolaveen, one of the organisers of An Dream Dearg, joins me now. Ciarán, you're very welcome. This was a long time coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Claire. Yeah, exactly that. We've been waiting on this from 2006, when the original commitment was made by the British government as part of the St Andrews Agreement. Since then, we've had many public consultations, continuous power sharing, crisis talks, collapse dormants, and all of that in between. And nothing has so far delivered rights. And it is a tribute and testament to the power of the amazing campaign you referenced there, the huge crowd out on the street of Belfast on Saturday. And, you know, this is a recognition to this campaign that we were able to push an issue which was, to be completely fair, on the very edges of the political debate around 2016, right to the very centre, and get over the line to secure rights. We've much more work to do, but this is an historic achievement.
Yeah, and do you think that this news today, that this legislation is coming, that that will deliver rights?
Well, it's a basis for us to build on. I mean, we're still waiting on clarification in terms of within the legislation that during the details that were released as part of the Queen's speech. The Secretary of State has provided himself with step-in power, something that we were seeking, because as you all know, as your listeners will be aware, we currently don't have a functioning executive here. And the way the legislation was originally drafted, it was dependent on the First and Deputy First Minister on appointing a commissioner, accepting the standards. And in the absence of that, our concern is that this legislation will go into the statute books but actually will never be implemented. So there is an onus on the Secretary of State now, Brandon Lewis, to ensure not only that this legislation goes through, but then that he uses the powers that he has provided himself with to start to build that infrastructure. And that's certainly what we'll be seeking from him in the time
ahead. And what does that mean? What does that look like, the infrastructure, and what will be the practical things that will happen after this legislation goes through?
Well, if it goes through in the way we would hope, we will see a commissioner appointed. And from that, the commissioner will then set standards for public services and public bodies in terms of their engagement and service provision for our community. We have an expanding Irish-speaking community here in the north, as was evidenced on Saturday there with a huge turnout. And that community, as things stand currently, doesn't exist in law. You're entitled to no services through the medium of Irish. You're entitled to no engagement with the state through Irish if you're seeking things like bilingual signings or whatever. It's all very, very difficult in the absence of any law actually stating that the language has an official status here. So we're hoping that all of that can be remedied, that we can set out in terms of, for instance, education, the entitlements of the 7,000 young people that are being educated through the medium of Irish, what their expectations can be from the state in terms of their engagement, in terms of the support provision that is provided to them, and many, many other areas as well.
And I mentioned Ulster Scots will also be included in the legislation. And do you think, Ciarán, that that will put an end to comments from certain members of the DUP about the legitimacy of Irish?
Well, I would hope so, but I suppose, you know, given our history here, I wouldn't hold my breath. I mean, I think what we have experienced from other jurisdictions where language legislation has been introduced, particularly places like Wales and Catalonia and stuff, is that when the state takes an active role, that a lot of the animosity and a lot of hostility that those languages faced from some quarters generally disappears over time, because it becomes more normalised, more socialised, and the state's taken an active role in its promotion and development. And I would hope that that would be the case here. It will probably take some time. I mean, the opposition to the Irish language is deep-rooted here in some quarters, unfortunately, and they will continue to use their power to try and frustrate and delay and obstruct this, I'm sure. But I suppose there is an onus on the Secretary of State to ensure that the commitments that his government made, in not only in 2006, but again in 2020, are finally delivered. And certainly from a campaigner, from an activist perspective, we'll be keeping a close eye on this, and we'll be ensuring that our voices are heard. We have put this issue right to the centre, and we have a key voice in all of this.
You mentioned Wales there, and you say that the legislation that's coming today, it doesn't go as far as the legislation, does it not, that they have in Wales?
No, it doesn't, Claire, and that is unfortunate. I mean, we've been very critical. Even in 2020, when the new decade, new approach was originally published, and we pointed out the fact that in 2006 the British government stated very, very explicitly that the legislation would reflect on the experiences of the south of Ireland and also of Wales. Now, if you look at the models that exist both in both jurisdictions, the rates provision contained within the support structures that the state are providing, they're far in advance of what's being offered through new NDNA. So in our view, the original commitment of the British government still hasn't been fulfilled. However, it does represent a hysterical milestone. We do have the official status for the first time. We will have a commissioner appointed. And this isn't the end of the road for us. You know, we are open and transparent in saying that we will continue to lobby, we'll continue to campaign and be active in terms of, because we're very genuine and committed in terms of the revival of Irish here, and we're hoping in terms of the time ahead that we're going to see a more proactive road from the state instead of the obstruction from the state that we've had so far.
And Ciarán, people might be aware that this includes the repeal of the Act of Justice of 1737, or the part of it that bans Irish from the courts in Northern Ireland, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, and that's actually, I'm sure your listeners will have probably a keen interest, that's actually the last existing penal law that's still in on the statute books here. So we're still talking about penal laws being enforced here which prohibit the use of Irish. It's absolutely draconian in its days, but, and it's an indication in terms of, the suppose, the absence and the hostility that Irish has faced. This is the first time since the state has been founded in the north over 100 years now, they will have any official status. So all the legislation that has been done thus far around the language has been designed to stymie, to restrict the use of the language. And indeed, over the years, many activists have been imprisoned for having the temerity to erect bilingual saying aids and stuff. And this is a history that probably isn't widely known. I mean, we're celebrating 50 years from the first Irish medium school, which has had a transformational effect in terms of the revival here. When those pioneers established that school, they were threatened with arrest by the state for having the temerity to educate their children through Irish. So if you consider the distance that we've travelled since then, the huge crowds out on Saturday, the broad public support, we now have a majority of MLAs in support of this, huge international support. It is a testament to that community, to our resilience and their very positive approach we've taken to this campaign.
But listen, you mentioned there that when legislation has been passed in other jurisdictions, you mentioned Wales, that the animosity tends to lessen. But we do know that there is a very entrenched, and I think you can see that too, opposition from some unionists to this. Do you expect any trouble once this legislation is passed?
I wouldn't anticipate trouble as such. I do anticipate, however, that they will, as I mentioned, they will try to frustrate this. They will try to obstruct this. I'm aware that there's also other big macro political debates and discussions happening around the protocol, for instance, and there are efforts to get the executive up and running. And our concern would be that once again, the Irish Language Act will be used almost as a fig leaf to try and kind of appease the DUP and entice them back in, and they'll be given guarantees or in limiting this or even opportunities to frustrate and delay this. I suppose, so we have no confidence in terms of the British government, in terms of the DUP in particular, regarding our approach to the language. We do have full confidence, however, in our community. As I've stated, it's the organic community-led campaign that has got this issue this far, and we're not just going to leave the scene. For those that had hoped that, you know, the high point of 2017 and 2018 and then we would go back and allow the politicians to sort this out, we're playing an active role in the democratic process, and I think that's incredibly healthy in a democratic society, that we are not merely spectators on this, that we're actually having an active role, we're using our voice, and we're affecting change and changing the world around us. And that's a lesson for many other campaigns.
I think it was a real moment in time to see all those people, you know, mostly young people, out on the streets at the weekend, peacefully demonstrating for this.
Yeah, it was absolutely incredible, Claire. And to be fair, I mean, we had people who were very emotional on the day, particularly people from the older generation, who, when they were, you know, taking Irish classes in the 70s and the 60s, and when they were deciding to send their kids maybe to school for the first time, could never have believed in their wildest dreams what has actually come out the other end of this in terms of the revival project. It is an absolutely incredible story, and story of human achievement and endeavour and everything else. So it is incredible that it was a huge sea of positivity. And as somebody who was involved in organising, I can only, you know, give my huge respect. We had an unbelievably committed cohort of very young activists who were working day and night to ensure that things like those crowds that you've seen on Saturday in Belfast doesn't appear by chance. There's a lot of work that goes into making that happen. And there was huge work by particularly young people to ensure that. And the lessons the sense of empowerment that they'll get from all of that in terms of their future trajectory of their lives, the fact that they can have an impact, that they don't have to sit back and wait on other people making decisions on their behalf, is incredibly positive, and it's incredibly healthy in a democratic society.
Well, Ciarán, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today. colleague Ciarán McGillivain there from On Drám Dearg. Dr. Maura Finn will be here later. She's going to be talking about a topic that's very, very pertinent to an awful lot of people right now: hay fever and seasonal allergies and how to deal with them. And she's going to talk to us about the treatments available too. So if you have any questions for Dr. Maura, text us now. The number is 51551, or you can email todaycb@rte.ie.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.